All right, I'd like to welcome everyone out tonight for our September RAC meeting. As of right now, we're one RAC member short for a majority. We'd like to have an approval of the agenda and minutes.
Can we approve the agenda and minutes?
I think we can.
We can't. We don't have a quorum.
Okay. No.
Any comments on the agenda?
Yeah.
No comments.
I think the agenda is great, just personally.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. We'll move to Wildlife Board update.
Yeah. The last RAC meeting, Kevin, I think, was on a fire. So Todd Huntington filled in as our RAC chair. He was unable to make the board meeting, so I sat in and represented our RAC to the board, meeting. There were a lot of motions. We'll highlight some of the ones that we discussed specifically at our RAC meeting. The turkey depredation rule was presented and it passed unanimously at the board meeting. It passed at our RAC unanimously as well. There wasn't a whole lot of discussion with that. The board meeting was several hours long, or it was a long board meeting. Some of these items took several hours of discussion, several hours of public comment, and they certainly took everyone's comments and into consideration. Let's see here. Talking about the fee schedule, the proposed fee schedule, which included, if you remember, bobcats are now $5 a tag. The proposal was to make it $15 a tag, and there was quite a bit of discussion whether the jump in cost needed to be threefold or not. At our RAC, we felt that that big game hunting and tags should not supplement other programs in the division, and so they felt that there should be an increase in the bobcat tag. At that time, we were the second RAC on the agenda out of the five RACs, and at that time, the presentation that the division offered stated that the current $5 fee doesn't cover the cost to administer the program, but there weren't any hard numbers of how much it costs to administer the program. And so our RAC struggled with coming up with a dollar amount, and basically our RAC ended up saying the bobcat fee should be increased to cover the cost, and if it takes $15 a bobcat tag, it should be $15 a bobcat tag. And anyways, so the board approved the proposed fee. There was one amendment that I'll discuss there in a minute, but the board approved. Let me back up a second. At the other RACs after our meeting, the division ran the numbers, ran the reports, and it ended up being that it cost more than $15 per tag to run that program. So even at $15 per tag, it still doesn't cover the cost to administer the bobcat program. And so that was presented at the other RACs, and as such, the other RACs voted to increase to $15 per tag. The board approved the proposed fee schedule. It passed 4-2. Mike King and Bill Fenimore were opposed. And then there was amendment onto that as well. One of the board members felt that the $300, if you remember, we also built in a U-Hunt fee to hunt bighorn sheep. There could be an upcoming opportunity that we need to go in and remove some bighorn sheep. So we didn't have the U-Hunt fee on the books, and so we had to put one on the books in order to have a future hunt. The fee was $300. Some of the members of the board felt that was way too low. If you looked at Nevada and some other states, it was a much higher fee. And so the board approved 4-2 to increase the non-resident U-Hunt from $300 to $1,000. I will say that I just learned just an hour ago that $15 per bobcat tag price still has to go through the legislature. So when bobcat tags go on sale, what did you say it was, October?
October 1st.
October 1st, they'll still be $5. They'll be unlimited and six tags each at $5 a pop. So it won't take place until July 1st, 2015, if the legislature approves it. There was also a lot of discussion about the Cougar Management Plan. Some of the other RACs, I think one other RAC, I think the Northeast Region RAC, also had concerns about not having a female subquota, and their RAC voted to have a female subquota. The RAC heard from the houndsmen, the sportsmen, and it's my opinion that the RAC or the Wildlife Board, they approved the division's recommendations as presented unanimously, but they really did so with the understanding that this is kind of a Band-Aid. This year's a Band-Aid. They understand that the Cougar Plan is very complicated. It's going to be redone this year, and that next year we'll have a Cougar Plan that that takes some of these concerns into consideration. And so as a Band-Aid and understanding that this is the best that we could do for this year, and they approved it. I should also mention, I forgot on the previous, regarding bobcats, there was also a motion or a public comment or a request to extend the bobcat season. I think the public wanted it with 2 weeks, I believe. I'm not a bobcat hunter, but there was something about later in the season, the bobcats are more active. The large toms, the trophy toms are more active, and so the opportunity to get a trophy tom, you have a much higher chance of getting one if you extend it a week or two. And I think some of the other states surrounding us do that as well. And so the Wildlife Board heard that discussion, and there was a motion that was passed 4-2 with Mike King and Bill Fenimore being opposed. They extended that bobcat season by 1 week. And then, other than that, like I mentioned, the turkey depredation rule passed unanimously, and they added additional turkey transplant sites to the plan as well, and that passed unanimously. So, Mike, did I leave anything out? Did I represent the board well?
As far as I can remember, I had to leave early, so I don't know what went on after about 2 o'clock.
Okay. All right. Any questions about that? Okay.
How about a regional update?
Okay, let's do a regional update. It's a busy time of year, as reflected in our attendance at tonight's meeting. People are busy. Our aquatics section have a lot of things going on. In 2 weeks from today, this week, they're going to be surveying Huntington Creek. Both the kind of the middle area and then up below the dam. There's Kokanee Salmon Day at Flaming Gorge on the 20th. And then the last few weeks they've been taking bluehead suckers out of mill site and releasing them in the San Rafael. Some of the bluehead suckers took a hit due to the Sealy fire and some of the sediment and flows that came down after that. To help supplement that population, they took some out of mill site. This time of year, we do a lot of gill netting in our reservoirs. There's our schedule for this year. All of you are certainly invited to attend any or all of those events. It's a really nice time to rub shoulders with our biologists and pull nets and see what our reservoirs have and see what kind of fish and the size of fish that are in them. So if you're interested in attending any of those, let myself or Justin Hart know, and we'll get you the times and locations to meet at. But we'd love to have you. Outreach, Brent, and we have a new outreach employee, Walt Maldonado. You probably know him. He currently officially took on we have a new program in our agency called Wildlife Recreation, and he is now our Wildlife Recreation Specialist. And his job will be to host events. So whether it be Kids Fishing Day or teaming up with an archery club in Moab and having an archery night, or teaming up with a shooting range and having a public shooting event, But he's you know, archery in the schools. But he's kind of our guy to run that program. He's also going to continue to do our walk and access program and our dedicated hunter program as well. That's we're excited to have Walt on in that capacity. We have a kids fishing day this week at Green River State Park, and then the following week we are going to have a float in the parade. I think this is the first year we'll have a float in the parade. Walt's kind of leading that effort. And then going on right now is the Utah State Fair in Salt Lake City, and we have a wildlife building there. It's a very it's a really cool display. We get a lot of visitors in that building. And it's a busy time of year for habitat section. This is the time of year that we do most of our restoration projects. The idea is to get seed on the ground before snow flies, the winter moisture and spring moisture that allows those seeds to germinate and be successful. So we really have habitat projects going on in all counties in our region. They're flying seed tomorrow on the Henry Mountains. We're doing some aspen work at Cold Spring, both on some private land up there that is adjacent to our WMA. And then we have stuff going on in the Book Cliffs and on Cedar Mountain. And a lot of these projects we're teaming up with our federal partners, BLM and Forest Service and CITLA. I work on private land as well, but we all come together, pool our money and resources and restore thousands and thousands of acres each year in our region. Law enforcement is busy as well. They're working all the hunts. They're out on the mountain talking to people, responding to phone calls and leads. They're also continuing to work our AIS at Bullfrog. They're working on our AIS check stations and ramps and teaching people at Quagga and making sure people are draining their boats correctly. And here's some dates on some hunts that are going on. Hunting, of course, has already started. We have several hunts coming up, specifically for youth. This year, for the first time, we usually have youth pheasant hunts, but this year, for the first time, we'll actually be doing a Hat Ranch. So if you're interested in getting one of your youth to sign up for these hunts, you can call our office on September 29th. Each hunt is limited to 20 youth, but we'd love to. Hopefully, those usually fill up really fast. So if you're interested, call on the 29th and reserve a spot for your youth. Youth waterfowl hunts start in the next 2 weeks, and then the general season starts on October 4th. There's some other dates for you as well for other species. We just hosted a clinic at Desert Lake on Saturday. We teamed up with Ducks Unlimited, and we had 5 or 6 different stations that the youth and the general public came and learned about waterfowl hunting. So they came, they learned about waterfowl identification. We had a trap shoot station along the way. People could practice shooting trap. We learned about firearms, learned about duck calling. We learned about how to run your dogs and how to set out decoys. It was the first of its kind that we've had in our region, and they actually did it statewide. So most other regions also had these clinics. And I think we were expecting maybe 30 to 40 people show up. We actually had 150 people show up, so that was really promising. People of all ages. I'm sure we'll be doing it next year and for years to come. Well, there's some other dates for hunts that are starting soon. So you guys are probably all aware of those and probably have tags for some of those. And this is kind of recap what the wildlife section is doing. We've done bison surveys in July, pronghorn classifications as well this summer. And then just last week, on September 3rd, we transplanted an additional 15 mountain goats to the La Salles from the Tushers. As part of the plan that the board passed last summer, the mountain goat plan for the La Salles, it authorized transplanting 40 mountain goats to the La Salles. Last year we did 20, and this year we did 15. We were hoping to do 20 this year as well, but weather conditions and flight conditions kind of kept it to 15. We'll get those other 5 goats next year, and they might come from a different herd. I should say that also last summer when the Wildlife Board passed the La Salle Mountain Goat Plan, they asked the division to put together a stakeholders group meeting. And that meeting will be on September 22nd. It's on a Monday. We'll meet at 10 o'clock in Moab at the Forest Service office, and the idea is to kind of carpool up in the head of the mountain and discuss mountain goats. You know, what they've done in the last year. We have GPS and telemetry data to show where they've gone and where they've, you know, what areas they've come in and out of, how they're using the natural resource area, or the resource natural area, I should say, the research natural area, RNA. And then also hear from other groups who have concerns. The Forest Service will be there. The Farm Bureau will be there. And then Nature Conservancy and the Grand Canyon Trust and Wild Utah will be there as well as a permittee. Really, it's open to anybody who wants to discuss mountain goats. Hopefully, it'll be a good event. The idea is to get out on the ground and not necessarily be confined to a classroom or to a small room. And hopefully, the atmosphere there will be a little more conducive to open dialogue and good discussion. And that's all I got. I'll take any questions if there are any.
When's your goat meeting at again?
It's September 22nd. We'll meet at 10. Hopefully, we'll be back by 4 or 5.
At the Forest Service?
Yeah, we'll meet outside the Forest Service office and load into cars from there.
Any other questions for Chris?
Yeah. Go ahead, yeah.
Dennis Blackburn, what was your bison count? And do you have a phone number for Walt?
Yeah, I do. Let me answer the easy one first.
It's 820-8147.
Okay, 820-8147?
Yeah.
8147, okay.
832-820.
Yeah. 8147.
Is that 801 or 435?
It's 435. I don't, does anybody, who's here? The biologists aren't here. I don't have the exact number, but I know that it's right where they wanted the bison numbers to be. Right in line with where the plan needs them to be and what we were hoping they were to be. I don't have an exact number. I apologize.
And any other questions? That will start with the fishing guidebook and rule. And again, what we'll do is where we don't have a quorum, let's go ahead and express our thoughts to each of the action items. And if someone expresses their thoughts and you have a different opinion, let's please hear that, so that the Wildlife Board can know what we're thinking.
Sorry, my back doesn't let me bend over like that all night long. Good evening. My name is Paul Birdsey. I'm the Coldwater Sport Fish Coordinator. And thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation tonight on our recommended regulations for 2015. I'd like to recognize my counterpart, Drew Cushing, the Warm Water Sport Fish Coordinator, who's here in the audience, along with the regional staff of Justin Hart and Calvin Black, who deal with the management of the waters here in the Southeast region. The presentation tonight's going to basically break down into three parts. The first part's going to be our results from our online survey that we do every year for the regulations. Then we're going to deal with some statewide recommendations, and we'll go into the individual region recommendations. So we do a survey every year. We do this online. It's not a scientific survey, but it allows us to get input from a wide variety of people. Previously, some of you may remember, we used to do an informational rack in the springtime to try and gather information from the public. Those were not well attended statewide, and in total, we were basing our recommendations probably on the input of around 100 people statewide. This particular method In 2014, we got responses from just over 1,300 people on 13 different questions. The last question there is just a free form field of tell us what you think and, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, how do you think we're doing, and do you have any suggestions for other regulations or management changes? Of that 1,300 people, 750 people responded in that free form field. 294 of those comments were related to regulation changes. The remainder were management suggestions. We'd like to see tiger trout stocked here or whatever. And we referred those to the regional managers for their considerations as part of their ongoing management in those waters. So, if we look at those responses from those free form questions and try and break them down into several broad categories, the number one response dealt with people wanted more stream access. You may remember HB 141 passed a few years ago, which limited stream access in the state of Utah. That's still a hot button issue with the anglers in this state. The second highest response was people want to see more law enforcement on our waters statewide. And these two items have been number one and two for at least 3 years now. There were a couple other interesting suggestions. They wanted us to provide a free license for active military or free license for those folks that are 70 years older or better. A couple more is that spearfishing has been a real hot issue the last few years. A lot of people indicated that they wanted less spearfishing opportunity in the state. A few, about half as many, wanted more spearfishing opportunities. And one item that seems to be growing is the bow fishing for all game species. Right now, people can bow fish for carp. People are asking for that opportunity to be able to bow fish basically 24/7 for all game species of fish. I don't know where that's going to go, but just want to make you aware it is growing. And finally, this has been an interesting phenomenon over the last 3 years. A lot of people want to see more regulations on our waters. They want more slot limits on waters. They want catch and release regulations. They want artificial flies and lures only. They want lower limits. And then there's some people that want to see less regulation. 3 years ago, these two bars were about equal. There were about 50-50. Last year, they were about 60-40 in terms of people wanting more regulation versus less regulation. Now we're up getting close to 70-30 in terms of that percentage. And a lot of it is that other surveys that we've done, people say that they want to be able to catch fewer fish, but they want to be able to catch bigger fish. And they equate more fishing regulation with bigger fish. It's not necessarily true in all cases, but that's the perception. And this is really just one more piece of evidence that people are not concerned with how many fish they catch, but the fish that they do catch, they want those to be a quality fish. They want it to be something more than, you know, a standard 10-inch fish, which they were very happy with 25 years ago. Okay. Last year, the legislature passed a law that said that with the approval of Wildlife Board, certain species in certain waters could be wasted. That is, not taken home and consumed. And we added a bunch to that list last year. We'd like to add a few more to that list this year. We have an illegal introduction of pacu into Blue Lake. That's a fish on the left. It's a relative of the piranha. We've had a management group at Fish Lake working on a management plan there, and they've recommended no limit on yellow perch in Fish Lake, and we want to provide those people the opportunity to not have to take those 4 or 5 inch perch home. They can just simply dispose of them there when they're fishing. And then finally, we have Gunlock, Sand Hollow, and Quail Creek reservoirs in Washington County. They have illegal introductions of smallmouth bass. According to the Virgin River Recovery Program, we are not permitted to manage smallmouth bass in that drainage. We've had a no limit on them. We're going to recommend this year, as you'll see in a moment, moving that from a no limit to a catch and kill regulation. Last year, the Wildlife Board asked us to explore additional spearfishing opportunities for those species in those waters that have a catch and kill or a no limit on waters. And that came down to 5 waters. There was Gunlock, Sand Hollow, Quail Creek for the smallmouth bass. There was a Green River for burbot, walleye, and channel catfish. And then there was Utah Lake for northern pike. So we did the survey as we were directed. 2 of the waters had substantial support, the Green River and Utah Lake. However, when we talk with the Green River Outfitters and Guides Association and the Forest Service folks there on the Green River, they were opposed to allowing spearfishing on that river, primarily in the A section right below Fleming Gorge Dam, because it's already a heavily used section of the river, and there was a belief that that would be increased user conflict between those two different groups. And if you've gone out there on a Saturday afternoon, it is not hard to understand that level of conflict. Sand Hollow, Quail Creek, and Gunlock reservoirs, we talked with state parks. They were opposed to, for the same reason, at Sand Hollow and Quail Creek to allowing spearfishing there. And when talking with Laura Melling, the park superintendent down there, she actually was aware of this proposal about a year ago and has done surveys of the users there at those reservoirs, and the people that use those reservoirs were opposed to allowing spearfishing there. They were ambivalent on the one at Gunlock. Factoring all that stuff together, we are not recommending any change to the spearfishing regulations at this time, with the exception of adding Pacu at Blue Lake. And we want to be able to consider spearfishing on a case-by-case basis in lakes as these species may be discovered in them, to assess the biological risks as well as the social conflicts that may arise from allowing spearfishing, rather than just having a blanket spearfishing will be allowed in these waters. Just a couple quick slides here to show some facts about spearfishing, just to show you where we're at in Utah relative to the rest of the nation. 6 states have explicit prohibitions on spearfishing. 31 states allow spearfishing for non-game fish only. 1 state allows spearfishing for non-game fish species, but only with a special license. 5 states, including Utah, allow spearfishing for selected game and non-game fish on selected waters throughout the state. The other states, that doesn't add up to 50, the other states did not specifically mention spearfishing in their proclamation, so we don't know whether that implicitly means that it's allowed or it implicitly means it's prohibited. In 2008, prior to 2008, the spear fishermen had the ability to harvest 1 fish over 22 inches and 1 fish under 22 inches. This put them in direct conflict with the hook and line anglers. They could go out and legally shoot 2 tiger muskie, for example, under 40 inches, one under 22, one over 22, whereas the hook and line anglers had to be able to wait until those fish were 40 inches before they could harvest one. So in 2008, we made the limits that applied to everybody else, applied to the spear fishermen also. Prior to 2008, 12 waters were open to spear fishing. We added two waters in 2008. And then last year, we added eight more waters to bring that up to 22 waters that are allowed for spearfishing. So in this particular case, Utah is already pushing the edge of the envelope in terms of being pretty liberal in terms of our allowance for spearfishing statewide. So we're, yes?
Well, since you've got, is there any kind of information about injuries or accidents related to spearfishing?
We don't have any information. You mean to human injury?
Yeah, that's mostly what I was thinking about.
I am not aware of any injuries that have resulted from spearfishing. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened, but I'm not aware of any.
And then that might be something that would be available, because that is a projectile weapon if treated in an emergency room. It's probably reportable. But some of you have to go to the trouble of getting that. But probably the state would have that in their health care. Anyway, but are they concerned then more about wounded fish? Is that the idea? Or?
What we're primarily concerned about is the conflicts that result from between the spear fishermen and the regular anglers. And that is... It's a social conflict on the water, but it's also there's a perception of the regular anglers that the spear fishermen go out and kill all the big fish. So we don't have the information to say whether that's true or false, but nonetheless, there's thousands of people that believe that particular sentiment. Well, and if you, spear fishermen have to have a dive flag.
Okay.
And you have to stay 150 feet away from that dive flag. So theoretically, they can cordon off, two or three spear fishermen can cordon off one whole cove of a place like Jordanelle Reservoir.
That's a problem. Okay.
So, as I mentioned, we are recommending that Paku and Blue Lake be added to the list of species that can be spearfished for. Paku are interesting creatures. They are relative of the piranha, except that they have flat grinding teeth rather than the sharp tearing teeth. And they eat primarily nuts and berries and vegetation. Okay, our second Wildlife Board action item from last year was to explore the idea of an unlimited at-home possession of fish. That is that once your catch reaches your house, it's no longer considered part of your daily possession limit. Currently, the fish in your freezer are considered part of your daily possession limit. Sorry about that. we'll be at your house right after the meeting. So we added this question to the survey in 2014, and there was support for the change in the survey. However, the DWR regional managers, when we met with them after the survey, they had a concern about the effect of this change on some fisheries, that we basically would get fished out in some of our cold water trout fisheries. So in looking at the issue, under harvest, that is not enough fish being taken, is an issue that is preventing quality fish from occurring in many of our warm and cool water fish that are bass, bluegill, walleye, yellow perch, etc. So the division for this year is recommending that we change the regulation to allow an unlimited possession of those species at your home And this does not take away the two-day possession limit in the field, but it does, you know, address those fish that you have in your freezer at home. And then following that, we have a couple of waters that we've recently completed creel surveys on. We will do creel surveys again on those waters in 2015, 2016. If the harvest remains constant, that is that this regulation doesn't alter people's behavior, we'll recommend moving forward with adding trout to that unlimited possession at that time. So, putting that into more specific terms, it says the warm and cool water fish species, that is all fish that are not trout, which is defined in the guidebook, at your permanent residence do not count as part of your possession limit. Part of that is we have to define what permanent residence is, and working with our legal staff, they've recommended that we use permanent residence as the domicile an individual relies upon in establishing residency for the purposes of Utah Code 2313-2, which is essentially can you buy a non-resident fishing license or a resident fishing license? You have a non-resident fishing license, this does not apply to you. Similarly, if you spend 4 months of the year as a camp host at Schofield Reservoir, that is not your permanent residence either. You cannot have an unlimited possession at your trailer there. Okay, moving into the regional recommendations. As I mentioned, there was a group put together a management plan for Fish Lake. They've recommended no limit on yellow perch. And also currently the limit on other fish at Fish Lake is 4 fish, 1 over 28 inches. They want to back that down to 4 fish, 1 over 24 inches, because they found that when those fish reach that 24-inch level, they can actually switch to being fish eaters. They grow really well, and in order to try and protect them for that extra year or two to allow them to get to be like that young man's fish there, 30-plus inches. Continuing on with southern region, Lake Powell. Last year we added striped bass to the added disposal so that people could dispose of them in the water as they were fishing, because sometimes they're just so skinny that they're not worth eating. And it makes sense that if they're dumping them over the side, why shouldn't they be allowed to use those fish for bait or chum for other species that they want to fish for? So we want to add them to the legal bait list for Lake Powell only. Boulder Mountain Lakes, this was another management group that was put together. The Boulder Mountain Lakes management for historically has been very complicated. Even the description alone of what is a Boulder Mountain Lake takes up about a half a column in the current proclamation. And what we decided to do as part of this process was to make that a lot simpler. So we're removing the boundary description of what is a Boulder Mountain Lake. We're going to have we're recommending a 4-fish statewide limit to most of the lakes in the Boulder Mountains. And for a few waters, we want to have just specific water regulations. And again, be much simpler for the angler. And we believe in general will make it more in line with what they're trying to accomplish down there, which is establish some quality and some trophy fisheries. Okay, this is some of the changes. Currently, right now, virtually all of the lakes on the boulders are closed to ice fishing, except for a few that are open. We're reversing that. From now on, it's going to be this list of lakes right here which have the potential for over-harvest during the winter when people can target spring areas, et cetera, where those fish concentrate, will be closed through the ice fishing season. The rest of the lakes on the Boulder Mountains, and we're talking 82 lakes, I believe, will be open to ice fishing to allow that additional opportunity. So then we have Oak Creek Reservoir. This is one of those that we're recommending a special regulation. Right now, the lake is overpopulated with stunted brook trout. The anglers recognized that we had two options in dealing with this. Either the anglers could harvest a bunch of them, or we would have to do a rotenone treatment. So we said, okay, for 3 years, we're going to give the anglers the opportunity to go in there and harvest as many brook trout as they can out of there, see if they can increase the quality of brook trout. So we're recommending a 16 brook trout limit at Oak Creek Reservoir. Okay, this is the illegal introduction of smallmouth bass in these reservoirs. Mentioned before, we cannot manage them in there. We're recommending a catch and kill regulation on that species in those three waters. This is three additional lakes that will be open. These are on the boulders. We're removing the seasonal closure to provide local ice fishing. And this is something that Jake Albrecht with the Wildlife Board has been very interested in for the last several years. And he was part of the group that worked with DOT and the Forest Service to make this happen. So we're pretty happy that that has come about. Okay, southern region still. Currently, we have a 1-inch by 1-inch size restriction on the bait that can be used at that reservoir. There was a belief, or there was some evidence, that smaller baits for tiger muskie would not be ingested as deeply, so therefore they would experience less hooking mortality. There's a recent study that came out of the Midwest that shows exactly the opposite is true, that smaller baits are more likely to be deeply ingested and increases hooking mortality. So we would like to remove the 1-inch bait size restriction on those waters to hopefully reduce the hooking mortality when people want to catch and release those fish. And the same way at Bullock and Cottonwood Reservoir in the reservoirs in the northeast region to remove that 1-inch bait restriction. I will mention that we still have that restriction at Pine View and Newton Reservoirs. We have a very active angler group in that area that doesn't quite believe the data. So we want to do it here with the idea that when we show that it doesn't increase hooking mortality, we'll move to remove that restriction at those two reservoirs in the future. Okay, Blue Lake, again, no limit on pacu, must be caught and killed. This is just a clarification for the Bear Lake fishery. It's half in Utah, half in Idaho. When we changed our rule in July 1st, it allowed the use of two poles with any fishing license. We wound up being out of sync with what Idaho's regulation is up there. People can fish anywhere on the lake with a license from either state. All this says is that if you fish in Idaho and you want to fish with more than one pole, you need to obey the Idaho regulation. Okay, there are two small reservoirs in Logan Canyon area that were inadvertently included in a restrictive regulation, which was intended for just the river itself, as Tony Grove Lake and White Pine Lake. We just want to simply change the wording in the rule to specifically exclude those two lakes. This, we're still in a process of tweaking this wording, but it's basically going to say not including Tony Grove or White Pine Lake. And they will have the standard four fish limit, which is what was always intended. Okay, here in the Southeast region, man, they've just got a ton of rule changes proposed for this year. We have a new fishing pond in Wellington, the Night Ideal Community Fishing Pond. As a community fishery, we're recommending the two fish limit there. And that's the Southeast region recommendation. This is just some information just presented for your enjoyment, I guess. We had a group that was hired by the division this past year to do some work trying to figure out how to sell some more fishing licenses. And one of the things that we asked this group to find out was what things are important to people that fish. So we have a group of active anglers, those people that currently hold a fishing license, and then there were the lapsed anglers, those people that had previously purchased a fishing license but had not done so for the last 2 years. And of these five things, we asked them, what's important to you? What do you choose when you want to go fishing, or what do you want in order to go back to fishing? And again, number one under the active anglers is they're a good-sized fish. And we don't get down to there will be lots of fish available until we get to number three in that case. And on the number one for lapsed anglers was that crowding was perceived as an issue. We don't know exactly what crowding means, whether it's crowding in a parking lot, whether it's they only go to community waters, or what the issue is there. We need to do some more follow-up work. But still, if you look at it, it gets down to number four of there will be lots of fish available. And then finally, for the last 2 years, we've been telling the Wildlife Board and the RACs that we were going to do some age and growth work on our lakes to look at how those fish grow in the reservoirs and work towards having regulations that are applicable for the primarily the warm water species. This is an example from Willard Bay, but it holds true for many waters throughout the state that we've investigated thus far, is that the fish grow really well for about 4 years, and then they flatten out. They don't grow anymore. Now, fish have indeterminate growth. They should grow throughout their life. In this case, what we're seeing is when those fish reach anywhere from 18 to 22 inches or so, they simply don't get any bigger. And that's an indication that there's too many fish in there for the forage that's available. And we're going to be working to try and change that. And just, you know, we talk about underharvest and things like that. This is a result of underharvest. In the mid to late 1970s, a creel survey that was done on walleye at Willard Bay showed a harvest in excess of 15,000 fish. Same survey conducted in 2010 showed a harvest of walleye of 1,500 fish, so a 90% decrease. Most people practice catch and release. So that's the end of the presentation. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thanks, Paul. Any questions from the RAC?
What do you think they practice catch and release? I mean, what's the... You just don't want to mess with it?
No. Back in the 1960s, primarily, there was over-harvest in fisheries occurring pretty much nationwide. The ethic was if you catch it, it goes into your basket, it goes home, and it becomes part of your groceries. And so there was significant over-harvest that was occurring on many fisheries nationwide. You had the development of groups such as Trout Unlimited, BASS, some of these other large sportsmen's groups responding to that, that then said, you should catch and release. And they didn't say you should catch and release most. They didn't say you should catch and release some. They said you should catch and release. So we have almost two generations of anglers in the last 40 years that have been brought up with this idea that harvesting fish is only one step above devil worship. And some of the people, like I meet with bass anglers every month, and I also deal, you know, in my position with a lot of Trout Unlimited folks, all great people, but they have a different ethic there. And I'm convinced that you could go to their house and kill their new puppy, and they would be less upset than watching you throw a trout on the grill. But, you know, I did talk with, when I was out in California fishing this spring, I did talk with one of the biologists out there. They have the same problem going on out there. This is, again, a nationwide deal. One of their lakes, Lake Oroville, they had less than 5% of the bass being caught that were being harvested, and that's not enough. So they spent 5 years working with the anglers out there, showing them what was wrong with that. They have now increased that to about 45% of the bass that are being caught out there are going home with the anglers. With 45% harvest rate, we can actually do effective management. You can't do much with 5%.
Others.
Questions from the audience? Comments from the audience? I have. I'll add. I have a comment card here, and then after we'll go ahead and have you come up. Ken Strong.
Ken Strong, representing Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. Thank you for your participating on these racks. It's a great service that we need in this state, and for taking the time to do so. I have been lucky this last year to work with Paul and Drew. There's two guys that are really concerned about fishing in the state of Utah. We've worked quite well together. They haven't beat me up too bad, so I'm still here. Sportsman Fish and Wildlife accepts all the proposals that the division has made on the changes in fishing, with the exception of we would like to see trout included so that all fish, once they get to your residence, are no longer on your limit. We believe that that's the proper way to go, and we don't believe there'll really be a problem with it. One of the things that's come up that you've seen in this presentation is on the Oak Creek, on the boulders, they're raising the limit to 16, which means if you go up there and camp overnight and you bring your fish home, you're entitled to bring 32 fish home. Once you get them home, you can't go fishing again for trout until you consume those fish. So we're just thinking that it's easier for everybody if they just go ahead and put all the fish on that limit. And like Paul just said in the proclamation, it also says that 75% of the anglers now are catch and release. It's probably a little higher than that. So, and as far as the people coming from out of state, it was brought up that they could stay in trailers. Like Paul said, they have to have a non-resident license. If they have a non-resident license, it's not their primary domain. They can't overfish the fish. So as a whole, we think that that's the proper way to go. That also a part of this was that this law's been in effect for quite a while, and it's totally unenforceable. In the last 20 to 30 years, there's been two, maybe three times that it has been enforced. if we can't enforce it, really there's no sense in having it on the books. So we would just like to see that the limit on all fish is removed once those fish hit your primary domicile. Thank you.
Mr. Blackburn.
I just had a question about the survey. How do you participate in it? How do you...
The survey is done online through a software product called SurveyMonkey. But we advertise that the survey is available through news media, as many different outlets as we can, and to try and get the maximum amount of participation. And I should mention that this is only one way that we gather information for our regulations. I used to have Justin's job. We received phone calls, our managers received phone calls, emails, letters, et cetera, throughout the course of the year with people making suggestions on regulation changes. Those get factored into the following year's recommendations. We also have open house meetings. We ask when we're out doing creel surveys about various waters and regulation changes there. Last night at the Southern Region RAC, it was suggested that the Division of Wildlife Resources has driven the more regulation approach to the management of our waters. But that is absolutely, almost across the board, false. We truly have a user-defined system of management in the aquatic section. And as you saw, there's a lot of people that want a lot of regulations on various waters, and we try very hard to balance that amongst all the different user groups. But it's by and large the people that come forward and tell us what they want in various waters.
Thank you. Any other questions from the audience? Any comments from the...
I'd like to...
Probably more of a question due to the SFW comment. Paul, when you mentioned that some of the managers were concerned about the trout fishery when it comes to no possession limit at home once you reach your primary residence, are they concerned primarily with the hatchery-raised fishery, like community fisheries and stuff like that, or are they more concerned with the natural-producing fisheries?
They're almost entirely concerned about the trout fisheries, Darris. The community fisheries is one, but waters such as Panguitch Lake, Otter Creek, Paiute, where people tend to go. They are a harvest-oriented user group there, and there is a concern that they will go repeatedly, harvest the limit each time, and perhaps over-harvest those waters.
And those waters you mentioned, they're hatchery-supplemented or hatchery-managed fishery, not a natural producer.
They're driven almost entirely by hatchery production.
So if it's hatchery driven, then I assume it's more of a monetary concern than it is a biological concern?
That's true. Right now, let's just take Otter Creek, for example. We're stocking about... I think the quota there is around 150,000 8-inch fish a year for Otter Creek Reservoir. There's a concern that will be insufficient for a sustained harvest throughout the course of a year under this scenario. That 150,000 fish costs us in the neighborhood of $150,000 to maintain. And with flat budgets, we don't have the opportunity to increase stocking, you know, in an unlimited fashion. So that's what the concern is there.
But on the other hand, when the fish are all caught, they're all gone. And then I assume the concern goes from there to fishing licenses not being bought because fishing was so lousy.
Right.
Okay.
And you know, Richard's a nice guy. He doesn't want to get 500 phone calls getting told how bad the fishing is.
Okay. Thanks, okay. Paul. I guess I got one more question for Paul then. On the slide you showed from your survey, you said it was the third year in a row for increased need for more enforcement, and there was one other category
the stream access.
Stream access, it, right.
Yeah, that continues to be a hot button.
With those two being hot buttons for such a long period of time, is the division taking any steps toward increasing enforcement or actually taking a position on the stream access versus a neutral position?
Well, as you know, the state of Utah was sued by the Utah Stream Access Coalition over House Bill 141. Those two lawsuits are moving their way through the 4th District Court right now. The state Attorney General's office is actively fighting that lawsuit. The division, as part of the executive branch of the Division of Wildlife Resources, is supporting the state's position that we're neutral, but notwithstanding, we're providing support in terms of data, et cetera, to that effort. In terms of law enforcement, I do know that message has hit home, and many of the previously vacant CO districts have been filled over the last couple of years, and hopefully we'll start to see, you know, people get checked more often. I have a really good friend, well, you know, Brandon Barron, that was here in the region for a while. He's a sergeant in the northern region now. He, you know, they worked Willard Bay hard this past year, so you know, people should be seeing the results of having those COs on the ground. Yeah, and we do have the walk-in access program that we've been spending a ton of money on to provide access to stream segments that were closed as a result of HB 141. So it's being dealt with.
Does the miles of stream with public access due to the walk-in access program, is it still steadily increasing, or did it kind of plateau out?
It's plateaued a bit just because of funding availability. I expect it's going to start to go back up a little bit now with the change to the wildlife recreation program and reorganization there.
I had a question about the enforcement. So, I mean, that could mean a lot of different things. Were they specifically saying that they weren't seeing enforcement officers, or is there, or did they have some specific kinds of activities they were reporting, or is it just a vague, we want more enforcement?
First of all, I just will mention that the people that respond to these surveys are the people that tend to be the most vocal. They have to be in order to take the time to participate in the survey, because it's not a random stop somebody on the street and ask them questions. By and large, I'm sorry to say that there's a lot of racist people in this state. Almost invariably, those comments revolved around whatever minority group they happen to see out at their particular fishing water were the ones that were taking home 5-gallon buckets full of fish. I know myself, in years and years of fishing out in this state, I think I've been checked in the field less than 6 times of all the fishing that I've done. So some of the comments were just general. I buy a fishing license, I want somebody to ask me to see it. But there were a lot of those so-and-so, insert your favorite minority, are taking all of my fish.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Yeah, it just seems, I mean, fishing is one of those things that anybody can do if they've got a hook and a line, and there's a lot of places where you can throw it in some water. It's like enforcement, I think, is like it's one of those kinds of laws you have because you want people to be cooperative, not because you're able to enforce things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you, but, you know, one of the things that changed over the last 35 years is the perception in the public of it was okay for John Doe to go out and kill a deer during the off season because he was going to take it home and feed his family. But now we have the Help Stop Poaching. We need to move the angling public to that same level of recognition that they're the eyes and ears of the conservation officers.
One comment I have, I'd like to apologize to the Wildlife Board and to Mike that we don't have a quorum tonight, and we'll work on that. I think part of it could be time of year. But I would just ask those of us that are here tonight to do our best to give the Wildlife Board the best direction we can, even though that we don't have a vote. Be real clear in our thoughts, and send Mike to the Wildlife Board with some direction, even though we don't have a vote.
So do you want us to go around the room, or you just whoever wants to?
Yeah, I would say whoever wants to give their opinion, and if they have stated your thoughts very well, then you know, maybe it's covered. But if there's some other thoughts you have, make sure that if it's not represented, to please give those thoughts.
Well, if I was making a what is it we make here?
Motion.
A motion. if I was making a motion, I would make the motion to support the division's recommendation as presented. I sympathize with SFW's putting trout into the same category as the rest of the fish, and I hope we get there someday, but I also appreciate the division's concern of, you know, going 20 years back in time as far as is some of those fisheries if they get overfished. So, and I'm pleased that the division is doing some kind of a study to see if it's going to be effective or not. And it sounds like they're more than willing to add trout to it if it does not affect it. So I would support the division's recommendation as they presented it.
Good. Thank you.
Well, I would agree with that. I thought it looked pretty reasonable. I was wondering about spearfishing, but my questions were answered. So.
Chair, that's
right. I agree with Derek. I think those are great comments.
Yeah, me too. Except for I want to know if anybody spearfished.
I haven't.
Big catfish down by Lake Powell. You always hear about the dam, they're like the size of cars or something. I would really like to know.
Would you want to come face to face with one of those things?
I don't even get in the water, but I mean, if you accidentally just nick them, I wonder if they get mad enough to come and eat you. I'm scared.
I've spearfished, but in warm tropical water. I don't understand this idea of wanting to jump in a super cold lake with a wetsuit on. That doesn't sound fun to me.
Yeah, I stay out of the water. So I swim like a rock.
You're a good swimmer.
and along those lines, I'd just like to make the comment. I think that fishing in Utah is at this time incredible. I think with as much work that's been done in, throughout the state and the diversity between the high mountain lakes and the management all the way to Lake Powell and the diversity. The state's got an incredible fishery. And I'm not a fisherman, but because of the management of the state, I've found myself more and more loving to fish just because of the opportunity the state provides. And so I would be in line with Darris's comments as well to be in line with the division's proposal.
And finally, my comment, I appreciate the information and the presentation here, too. It was thorough and very informative, so I appreciate that, and I would go along with what's been presented here and support that, and what the division has said.
I appreciate your sense of humor.
Some people don't.
It livens it up.
Kevin, you got another question back here.
Okay. Okay, we got a question from the audience, Mr. Blackburn.
I'd just like to say SFW and what they were saying. I didn't know they even cared about fish. I'm glad I came here. But simplicity encourages compliance. Okay. And the limit's 4, when it used to be 12 and 8, and now it's 4. We've spent how much remodeling hatcheries?
A lot?
What's the dollar figure?
I can't offer up anything.
But we can't produce more trout?
Can I answer that?
The reason, last year we had the 2-day possession limit that we brought to you guys, which was an encouragement for folks to go out and take part, like, you know, the overnighters, enable them to fish for 2 days. This is the same kind of concept. If you look at our creel surveys, people don't take home a limit of fish every day. And so, you know, if you increase the limit from 4 to 8, or, you know, it doesn't encourage that kind of harvest. What we're trying to do is get people to be comfortable going back on multiple trips and make them feel comfortable in doing what, you know, people are probably doing already. So, you know, it's that kind of thing more than anything. And as far as our hatchery system, we actually produce enough fish to do more than what we need. We actually have one hatchery, Loa, that's scheduled to be closed this fall. The reason is it's excess. As Dennis said, we've reconstructed a number of hatcheries, and Fountain Green, for example, produces twice as much fish as it used to because the technology is advanced there. And so if you have a hatchery like Loa, which doesn't have that technology, and you don't have the money to update it, and you have mud snails, it's probably one that you should look at mothballing and waiting till you have money to deal with it, and if you need the fish in the future, which right now we don't.
Thank you. I think with the comments that we've given, even though we didn't have a vote, I think it gives the division some good direction, and even though we didn't have a vote, I think that they have the opportunity to look at not only what the division has recommended, but the SFW proposal. I'm sure will be looked at very closely. So I appreciate the comments from the public and from SFW. And with that, we'll go to informational item, fish lake management plan.
Well,
we're done. With that, we're good.
It's pretty close to Farron, but it's not in this region.
Yeah.